Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law, part of the BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport commentary teams, joined, happy to say, by a fit again, well again, Catherine Whittaker, or at least, what, 60%, Catherine?
Yeah, just about. I'm husky. I'm husky.
Husky, Eurosport would just about have her on the air in the current situation. We would have her on the air even if she was at 25%, because without Catherine, there's not much of a tennis podcast except when Marcus Willis is on, as he was last week. If you haven't heard that, do go and have a listen. He's very entertaining, building up to tiebreak tens, which takes place next Sunday, 23rd of October. Him and Andy Murray and Joe Wilfried Tsonga, Dominic Thiem, Goran Ivanišević, Tommy Haas, all in Vienna for the tiebreak tens event, all one night on Sunday night, just ahead of the main Vienna tournament. But Catherine Whittaker, we've got to start with lots of stuff that is kind of happening off the court. Let's start right away with Nick Kyrgios, because this morning, we record at the moment on Monday, Nick Kyrgios has just had a verdict come through on his behaviour of last week in Shanghai. He'd already been given a pretty substantial fine, but I think in the eyes of many people, perhaps not enough of a fine, not enough of a punishment for his apparent not trying during his match against Misha Zverev. And it has come through today that he has been fined a further $25,000. He has also been given an 8-week suspension, but that suspension is in itself suspended and reduced to 3 weeks if he agrees to see a sports psychologist that is deemed acceptable to the ATP in terms of the treatment that he takes. He has since agreed to accept that punishment and gone along with it. He's been pretty contrite in his statement that he's put out since then. Tennis Australia have also said that they support the action taken as well. If he didn't see a psychologist, it would mean that he would not play tennis again competitively on the tour or anywhere else until just before the Australian Open. But 3 weeks will be the reduction if he does undergo this course of action. What are your immediate response and thoughts to that?
I think it's a good sanction, a good move from the ATP. I think they have to be decisive when it comes to tanking. And I think we can all agree that it was tanking. You know, there have been some Kyrgios incidents that have been in a grey area. You know, that the set he played against Andy Murray at Wimbledon and the match last year at Wimbledon against Gasquet, where some would argue that tanking, perhaps too strong a word, but I think last week's match unquestionably was one of the most hideous, most blatant tanks, probably the most, in fact, definitely the most hideous and most blatant tank I have ever seen. So, and I think they have to take pretty harsh action on that, because otherwise it brings the whole game into utter disrepute. I like the empathetic, compassionate slant of offering him the opportunity to enter into I think they're calling it a plan of care. I don't think we know yet whether Kyrgios is going to accept that pathway for a reduced ban. It's going to be very interesting to see. You know, I reread that New York Times article that came out on him just ahead of the US Open and what he said in that, and he admitted in that to not putting in his best effort. You know, there was a quote saying, if I decided that I wanted to win Grand Slams, then I would be trying a lot harder than I am now. I just haven't decided what I want yet. And of course, that sort of big picture effort in terms of training and everything, rather than effort in specific matches. But, you know, there's lots of people, of course, Andy Murray, you, David, have just retweeted a comment from Anne Kiotafong saying, Nick Kyrgios is 21 years old. I'm sure we can all admit to doing and saying stupid things at that age, and some of us continue to do so. I'm sympathetic with, you know, poor behaviour, with, you know, appropriate contrition, et cetera, from a young person. However, he's not a teenager anymore. 21 isn't 19. Yes, he's still young and allowances can be made for that. But equally, you know, when I was 21 and, you know, made mistakes or behaved poorly, people punished me appropriately and responded appropriately. So I think, you know, we shouldn't be letting him. I think compassion, yes. Letting him off the hook, no.
No, well, I would agree with you. I would add to that I don't think this is really about age. I think age is part of it. Certainly immaturity is part of it. But 21-year-old Catherine Whittaker is very different as a human being to 21-year-old Nick Kyrgios, just in terms of the way those two people are wired. And that is going to be the case across the spectrum of who you are. The difference to me here is more, you look at the behavioural elements to Nick Kyrgios, there's a lot more to it, I feel, than just him not being bothered or this, that, the other. I think there probably is more going on with him. He is wired in a certain way, and I think that with that in mind, he needs to look after himself and people need to look after him in a different way. I don't think you can just apply a one-size-fits-all solution to a guy like Nick Kyrgios. First of all, I would say it is, to my mind as well, the worst example of tanking that I've ever seen. I do remember Jimmy Connors in a match, the one we all celebrate against Aaron Krikstein for his 5-set comeback. There was definitely a set in that when he just didn't try. He gave up because I think as much as anything, he was saving himself.
Yeah,
for
that's
a fifth set.
A complete, in terms of...
Yeah, this wasn't tactical at all.
No.
This was, I can't be doing with this, and I'm
well,
not going to
try. He asked the umpire, can you wrap this up so I can go home?
It was unacceptable behaviour. I watched it live and shook my head. Anybody who listens to this show knows how much I enjoy watching Nick Kyrgios. Everybody enjoys pretty much watching him, but I really, you know, he's one of my favourite players to watch on a number of different levels. And I like aggro, I like all of that stuff. I can't be dealing with watching a guy just not trying. I mean, he wasn't trying.
Tanking isn't aggro, though, is it? I have a lot more time for the aggro than I do for the tanking. I think the tanking is deeply insulting to the opponent. I mean, really deeply insulting. I thought Misha Zverev handled it well. Deeply insulting to the person that didn't get a place in the draw and further down didn't get a place in qualifying because you took that place. I know the ATP Masters are mandatory, but you know, he could have withdrawn citing exhaustion or whatever. He'd played the week before and won in Tokyo and been glorious. And then, yeah, it's this attitude of, you know, as if somebody's... I accept the argument that he's got no one to answer to but himself. You know, yes, he's burdened with this talent and everybody, you know, has this sort of thing of, well, you've got all this talent. You know, if I'd been lucky enough to be given this talent, then I'd certainly be jolly well fulfilling it. Well, you know, that's just sort of resentment, isn't it? He hasn't got anyone to answer to but himself in terms of his talent. But equally, nobody's got a gun to his head forcing him to play tennis. You know, he can go and work in Asda if he wants and find out what the real world is like and find out the sort of troubles that other people have to deal with in a day-to-day life. You know, no professional life is perfect. I accept and see that there are downsides to being a professional tennis player. I'm sympathetic with those. I think I would get homesick as well. I think, you know, I'm sympathetic with him being a human being, but you know, you can't have everything your own way all the time. Basically, on balance, being a professional tennis player is better than most jobs. And if it's not for you, go and work in Asda. Go for it. Nobody's making you play tennis, Nick.
No, but that would not be a very sensible solution for tennis as a whole to be taking at this point, is it? You can't just say to the guy, right, well, we've had enough of you. Go somewhere else. That's why I think this...
Well, I'm not suggesting the ATP say that to him. I'm suggesting maybe his mum says that to him.
Well, yeah, no, but I wouldn't say that to my kid until I'd given them a good enough chance to rehabilitate themselves. And actually, that's why I think this is the right measure, because last week I had a number of discussions with different people about the punishment that he'd been given. Some people just said, oh, just leave him alone. You know, he's different. He's gonna behave like this from time to time. But the flip side is you get the better side of him as well. Other people were saying, no, you've got to throw the book at him. Chris Clary wrote an article which has pretty much borne itself out here late last week about how he feels that this is aggravated behaviour and a suspension should be forthcoming and would be just about commensurate with what he's done. And then, I mean, I had a conversation on Twitter with Mark Petchy, who basically feels that, look, he's not an angel, but he is box office, and you get the star quality as well. My feeling is you have to punish this. You have to discipline this sort of behavior, because otherwise you're saying it's acceptable. And that's what they have done, but they've also been forward looking and are trying to do something positive about it, because I don't think simply punishing this guy is going to achieve what we all would like to see, which is the best of Nick Kyrgios going forward.
No, he doesn't seem to respond well to authoritarian discipline. So, yeah, I think the move the ATP is making is a smart one. I suppose your stance on it depends whether you think any publicity is good publicity. I don't. You know, that video of him tanking has gone everywhere. Even the casual tennis fan, even the not casual tennis fan, somebody that has no interest in tennis, has seen that video. And for me, that looks bad for tennis and it has to be acted upon decisively.
I would agree. I think we've got the right solution. I would say 2 years ago, I think we had a similar conversation when the punishment was meted out to Kyrgios for what he said on court in the States and about Wawrinka. And there was that feeling of...
Well, it wasn't actually about Wawrinka, it was about Donna Vekic.
But... Sure, but there was that feeling of probation, wasn't there, about his sentence. And there's a similar feel to this, but this is at least decisive in terms of, right, let's do something about this. Let's see if we can help this guy help himself. Ultimately, though, it's up to him. He now has to embrace that and not just be the victim in his own eyes. He has to not just pay lip service to being contrite, but actually go out there and try to improve himself with the help that he's being offered here. And I'm hopeful. I'm an optimist, Catherine.
You don't say.
just a bit. Hey, oh, where are your dogs, by the way, today? Where's Rosie?
Rosie doesn't actually live with me. She's my mum and dad's dog. I mean, she is, you know, by extension my dog, but given my, you know, following the tennis tour lifestyle, I can't actually live with dogs. I do have some surrogate dogs today, though. I'm looking after a friend's two dogs. It's a dog merry-go-round in my flat, David. I've got two surrogate golden retrievers today, Ginny and Evie. They're yet to make a guest starring role on the podcast, but give it time.
Oi, Ginny. Evie.
No? Got earphones in, David.
Oh, all right, fine. Just trying. Anyway, Rosie, Ginny, Evie, any other dogs we need to bring into the podcast for the future? Anyway, just name them. Right, now, Maria...
All guest dogs are welcome, in my view. The I more, see. The merrier.
Okay, right. Well, we'll bear that in mind. Kyrgios isn't the only talking point off the court, because since we were last talking ourselves, Catherine, obviously last week we weren't able to cover the Maria Sharapova case because of your ill health. You didn't have a voice, which would have been quite useful for a podcast. There's a little example of the kind of cough that Catherine has been suffering with over the course of the last week. But Maria Sharapova has had her sentence reduced on appeal to Cass from 24 months to 15 months. We have had a pretty significant amount of publicity about that situation since then. It'll mean that she is due to come back onto the circuit in April of next year, potentially in time for the French Open and Wimbledon. Most likely, certainly for the French Open, she would need a wild card in order to play. But she's going to be eligible certainly 9 months earlier than she was originally sentenced to be back for. What was your initial reaction?
I mean, I accept the verdict of Cass. I mean, mostly I was preoccupied with the deeply unedifying response of Maria Sharapova. I mean, she was handed a 15-month doping ban for which Cass determined she had some, the violation for which Cass decided she bore some degree of responsibility. And her response to that was jubilant and defiant celebration. And I found that beyond uncomfortable, really. I can't quite comprehend why she thought that was appropriate. For me, that's overwhelmed the whole situation. I mean, my stance remains that she's received a 15-month ban for a doping violation, and that is terrible news for tennis. It's terrible for her, and it's just all really, really sad. In my ideal universe, there'd be a zero tolerance policy on doping, and that's not to make an example of Maria Sharapova. It's not about Maria Sharapova at all. I think that's just about the integrity of the sport. I don't think we can afford any complacency. But aside from any of that, I think that the most troubling aspect of it all for me was her response, which I can hardly comprehend, in all honesty.
I can comprehend it from her personal feeling of relief and a euphoria that generates from that position of thinking she was going to be out for 2 years, having a 9-month reduction on that, extra 9 months to play tennis, and most likely in her eyes, a feeling of vindication. Now, ultimately, I feel the same way. You were banned, you did something wrong. Maybe not to the degree that that was originally suggested in that tribunal and found in that tribunal hearing from the ITF. But the fact is, you still got a 15-month ban because you broke the rules. And I would prefer that to have been responded to in a different way. I certainly agree with that. I do think that on both sides, I think the ITF tribunal findings, I did feel at the time when I read them, as comprehensive as they were, I felt the tone of some of the findings to be over the top in terms of I felt there was a bit of grandstanding going on with a couple of the kind of turns of phrase used in that tribunal finding. And I don't feel they were necessary. But still, that's just presentation of findings more than anything else. And I feel the same about the way she responded to them. Just pull your head in a bit.
That is my main feeling on it.
You know, well, yeah, but that was how I felt about it. It suggests that they really do need to look at the way this process works. And also, I mean, I do feel that the ITF's communicating of changes needs to be probably better than that. And yet at the same time, that cannot be used as an excuse by somebody for failing a test.
It's similar, the sort of incomprehensibility, not a word, I'll press on anyway, of her response had echoes of the sort of incomprehensibility, God, I've said it again, of the whole situation with regards to her failing to realise that Meldonium had been added to the banned list, in that she is this international superstar brand businesswoman with an army, a small army of people working for her. How can it be possible in the first instance that she, I'm echoing the questions of many, they've been answered in the tribunals and everything. How can it be possible that one or more of these people didn't, you know, pick up on this and ensure that she was adhering to the laws? In this, and equally, how can it be possible with the army of PR and marketing and communications people she must have, you know, at her beck and call, that she misjudged the response to this so badly? I'm sure the answer to that is she would say she hasn't misjudged it, but I am pretty certain that by most sensible, reasonable people's reckonings, she has misjudged it.
The other thing I would say, just to add to that, is we could really have done without Head coming along and putting out their celebration tweet, and they've been roundly scorned by the majority, certainly the people we know, that, you know, it's just not appropriate.
I find it very bizarre. I mean, even if that's how Sharapova and Head felt privately, I mean, you know, the PR, the profession of PR and spin exists for a reason, doesn't it? I mean, surely there was nothing to be gained by them putting out that sort of statement. I found it very, very strange.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that there was something to be gained from their perspective, which is, whilst we may have this opinion and many of our colleagues do as well, and plenty of onlookers too, that represents probably a very small number of people compared to the number of Maria Sharapova fans who will be hooping and hollering alongside them. And I suspect there was an element of playing to the galleries in that. Anyway, that is the Maria Sharapova situation. I think the only other thing to say is, will she get a wild card, if required, into Wimbledon? I mean, there is a chance that she could get enough points in the couple of events that she would play before the entry list closes for Wimbledon in order to not need a wild card. But I don't think it is a cut and dried case that she will get a wild card from Wimbledon if she does require one. I think that there may be some splits and certainly some different views at Wimbledon, within Wimbledon, about whether she should or shouldn't get one. And I think that's going to be a very interesting storyline to follow.
I'd go far further than that. I see it's highly, highly unlikely that Wimbledon would give her a wild card. I think tour events.
Philip Brooks said that, certainly expressed sentiments of support.
I think tour events will give her a wild card. I would be surprised if Grand Slams do. The French Open, of course, will be the first to have to make the decision. And perhaps what they do will set the tone. And maybe Wimbledon will wait to see what Paris do before they make their decision. It's going to be very interesting.
It is. It is going to be very interesting. We'll wait and follow with interest. Now, on the court, Catherine Whittaker, 24 minutes spent talking about Kyrgios Sharapova and your dogs. And now we're on to stuff on the court. And, I say that. Joe Konta managed one match in Hong Kong in which she beat Naomi Brody 6-2, 6-2 before she had to withdraw with an abdominal injury. But she, despite falling outside of the top eight, now has a chance to qualify for the WTA finals because of another big piece of news that has dropped this morning, that of Serena Williams announcing that she will not be playing in Singapore because of the shoulder injury that has dogged her over the last two or three months, really. I mean, she seemed to be affected by it during the US Open. She certainly said she had. She hasn't played since then, and she's not going to play again for the rest of the year. It's It's a shame for all of these tournaments in Asia, but it's also a concern if assuming that Serena Williams does have a serious problem here that is preventing her from playing. It's a concern for her because, I mean, what has she played? The Slams and Rome, and that's about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's any great surprise, but it is an enormous shame. I really feel for that tournament, having missed out on having her there last year, to have to suffer the same this year. There's no question it is a blow. As much as, you know, Kerber is emerging as a great star of the game, and Muguruza as well, and plenty of others, it is an enormous blow, let's be honest. But not a surprising one, as many people reported on Twitter yesterday. She was in Disneyland yesterday, spotted in Disneyland, while Agnieszka Radwanska is already in Singapore preparing. The signs were there that this was going to happen. It is good news for Jo Konta. The situation seems to be that she will qualify for Singapore unless Svetlana Kuznetsova or Suarez Navarro win in Moscow. So it's a waiting game for her again. Hopefully, the waiting will be also recuperation time from that abdominal injury. I mean, it's just an enormous achievement for her to get to the top 10. So I'm sure Singapore would be just an immense icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's a terrible shame, isn't it, for Konta to get an injury like that at this stage of the season. But it's probably not that surprising, is it? And you look at the amount of players that are showing wear and tear now at this stage of the season. It is getting harder, more grueling by the week, isn't it? I mean, and Konta, of all players, I mean, she is as fit as you could possibly be, I think, as an athlete. And yet, pulled a muscle there or some kind of strain on the abdominal area, and she's unable to play unless she stays in the top eight. And what requires her to stay in the top eight will be for Svetlana. Oh, hello.
That's
who's
Evie.
This one?
Evie.
Hello, Evie.
Evie.
Evie's a Konta fan, everybody.
Evie.
And okay.
Evie, come on. Okay, Ginny's about to join in.
Okay,
Evie,
Ginny and Evie on the Tennis Podcast, brought
come
to you
on.
In association with the Telegraph.
I'm going to get the biscuits out.
Oh, Catherine's got the biscuits. I can't join in with the biscuits because I'm at the other end of the country, about 200 miles away. So
they're peanut butter flavored.
Unless I get my own biscuits, there will be no biscuits eaten this side of the Tennis Podcast. Anyway, let me just remind you, Jo Konta will qualify for Singapore, the WTA Finals, unless Svetlana Kuznetsova or Carla Suarez Navarro win Moscow this week. Both of them playing the top two seeds. There's also the question mark over Konta's fitness, that even if she was qualified in terms of the standings, she might not be able to take her place. We don't have complete clarity over the state of her fitness. How's Evie doing, Catherine?
The biscuits have had the desired effect. It's all calm here once again.
Okay.
But on the subject of Jo Konta, I just think it's a real shame for her not to be able to fight for that place in Singapore, for her having to passively sit back and just wait, because, you know, we saw in Beijing, you know, how great a fighter she is in that position. And it's just a shame for her. I feel for, you know, having to sit back last week and watch Sybil Kova win in Linz and leapfrog her, and now she has to do the same, just sit and hope during this week in Moscow, and you know, perhaps not tempt fate by booking her flight to Singapore. I don't know. I mean, presumably she will go to Singapore as an alternate either way, so maybe she will hop on that plane to Singapore. I don't know. It's a shame for her.
It is. Dominika Sibulkova, cracking performance from her last week in Linz. I mean, you know, she knew she had to go, I think, to the final to overtake Konta, and she was just relentless. I saw some of her matches beating Pavlyuchenko, her last year's champion, and it was like, this, unless you stop this woman in her tracks, she's going to keep on going. I was so impressed, and she's qualified now for the first time.
Yeah, it's great to see her in full flow. Yeah, she's fantastic. And was coming back from injury at the beginning of the year as well. So fantastic achievement for her to qualify. Who isn't a fan of Dominika Sibulkova? She's cracking, isn't she? What a great advert for, you know, this finals format, you know, the season ending finals. What a fantastic bun fight it's been for places these past few weeks, you know, really showing what these women are made of. It's been fantastic.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
The men and Andy Murray, two titles in 2 weeks, 10 match wins in a row, 20 sets out of 20 sets. That was his record in Beijing and Shanghai. And Catherine, it's now put Andy Murray after he beat Roberto Bautista Agut in the final. Fantastic performance again. And he's now less than 1,000 points behind Novak Djokovic in the race to number one. And the way things work out, even though he's nearly 2,500 points behind in the overall rankings, because the London O2 points come off just on the eve of that tournament, it means that if Murray were to win Vienna next week and then Paris, with Djokovic not getting to the final of Paris, he's not entered in Vienna next week, that would put Andy Murray as the world number one. It's hard to believe it's suddenly that close, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's hard to believe for Andy Murray as well, because I don't think, by all accounts, unless he's bluffing immensely, I don't think he had set it as a target for this year. I think it's absolutely a target for next year. And I think if he doesn't do it this year, he will do it next year. There's that period, you know, February, he didn't play because of the baby. And then there's, you know, Indian Wells, Miami, which Djokovic is defending winners, points at both. And Murray had a horror show there, frankly, last year. So that, I think, is when he was aiming to do it and thinking it was achievable. I think this has come as a bit of a surprise to him that it's suddenly within his sights. It's going to take a heck of an effort. I mean, having said that, he's the favourite in Vienna and he's the favourite in Paris. He's the favourite for every tournament he enters at the moment. So who's to say he won't do it? One thing to mention is that Davis Cup final ranking points, he got 275 ranking points for winning the Davis Cup last year, and they would come off the week after the O2. So let's say he got there after Vienna and Paris, stayed there for the O2, but wasn't ahead by more than 275 points. You know, obviously all of this depends on what happens to the O2, etc., etc. But Djokovic, once those ranking points came off, Djokovic would go back to number one. So it's possible Murray could get there before the end of the year, and then Djokovic, without doing much, could go back to number one to end the year as number one. So it is all incredibly complicated. I do wonder now whether, you know, in his post-match interview with Sky yesterday on the court, as I say, Murray was very much saying, you know, this isn't my goal for this year. It's very much a goal for the beginning of next year. I wonder, though, given just how achievable it is, whether he will be having a good long look in the mirror and thinking, let's do this year, Andy. It's going to be very interesting.
He's playing like the world number one, has been for a while now. And it's not just about level of play being the best. It's about that relentlessness of it. It's what Djokovic has done for such a long time. That consistent level of performance. Federer obviously did it. Anybody who is world number one for a considerable period of time puts those sort of results together back to back. And I mean, it's, if you look back in the records at the way Lendl used to carry himself, the length of time he was world number one, even though just in terms of his sheer level of best play, you might not always say that this is the most talented guy in the world or the best player in the world, but he was putting the best results together week in, week out. And Murray's doing that. And I mean, who knows how much of an effect Lendl has had in that regard, but it can't just be coincidence, can it? I mean, I wouldn't have thought, not given the timings that we look at and the record that he's had since the start of Queens. I don't think he will do it this year, because I just feel that at some point he's got to have a letdown, hasn't he? But he's going to get there. The way that you've just described the early part of next year and the points Djokovic has to defend, can't see Murray not being number one in the next 6 months or so. And then there's the big question mark over what is going on with Novak Djokovic right now, because it's not just his results. He lost 6-4, 6-4 to Roberto Bautista Agut, very good player, but still a player, to my mind, who's tailor-made for Djokovic if Djokovic is on decent form. And he looked just completely bereft, Djokovic. He looked harassed. He looked like he'd rather be somewhere else, in all honesty, and as though he just can't quite work out what the point is at the moment. And you know, to me, it was classic burnout.
Yeah, we're sort of watching him have an implosion before our very eyes, really. And at points, I'm finding it a bit tough to watch. You know, I feel like we're seeing a man in turmoil. Some days it obviously feels worse than others. I think against Roberto Bautista, you know, we saw him ripping his shirt and laying into Carlos Bernardes, and you know, he was clearly churning on the inside. Now, the details of that we don't know, but he is churning for sure. I think burnout is unquestionably part of it. I think Andy Murray being on his heels is part of it. I'm sure these, you know, whatever they are, personal issues are also part of it, you know. And I think, you know, Andy Murray nipping up behind him, that must be awful, you know. He's the world number one. I'm sure he defines himself by being the best tennis player in the world, and had come to be so comfortable in that position. Everybody, you know, cast our minds back to Australian Open when Goran Ivanišević was practically handing him the calendar year Golden Slam, and not just Goran. I'm not singling him out, but I do remember how strongly Goran put it. You know, he said, "Well, who's going to beat him?" And it's just immensely difficult to deal with. And the prospect of him losing that crown and suddenly feeling even more bereft than he is now, you know, however bereft he's feeling now, at least he's still nominally the world's best tennis player. Once he loses that, I'm sure he's thinking, well, what am I then? You know, where does that leave me? It must be pretty tough for him at the moment. I want to see Murray play Djokovic. I don't want to see Andy Murray get to number one without beating Novak Djokovic. I mean, I'm sure for Andy Murray, it doesn't matter how he gets there. But, you know, I think that would be only right. And it would be very, very interesting to see whether playing Andy Murray, playing the man that's trying to take his crown from him, would bring out the Novak Djokovic of the beginning of 2016, would bring something out of him, would bring some energy out from somewhere that he hasn't been able to find recently. I think that would be fascinating. He's been a bit cagey about whether his relationship with Boris Becker is going to continue beyond this year. And Boris, very visibly not in Shanghai this week, and in fact, instead in the crowd at the recording of Strictly Come Dancing, quite amusingly. So that is another big, interesting question mark for Novak. Who knows whether, well, it's not definite that their relationship will end, but if it does, is that his decision? Is it Boris's? What on earth is going on? Other than that, we know this guy is having a rough ride at the moment.
He is having a rough ride, and I felt pretty uncomfortable watching it as well. And I don't really know the precise reasons. Of course, none of us do, but I know what burnout feels like, and I've seen people go through it on the tennis circuit as well. A couple of people on Twitter even comparing it to watching Borg, if you go back 30 odd years ago at the age of 26 in his case. I just feel that, you know, the amount it must take, and I'm not completely convinced by the argument of the Andy Murray coming up behind factor to it. I think it's more about how Djokovic just feels within himself and how much it's taken out of him to be doing what he's been doing for the last however long. And he just looks short on energy to me and freshness and get up and go and point to it all. He needs to get that back. He needs to get that feeling of, I really want to do this and I want to achieve again, because he looks like he's lost that to me. I've seen it before with a few people, and I think the only way is to have a good long break and just get away from tennis altogether. But it's pretty difficult to do that on this circuit, isn't it? That's the problem.
Well, yeah, well, and also that's when the Murray nipping at his heels comes in. You know, he no longer can afford a break.
I think that's
feeding into the mental situation. You know, he'll know the situation with Vienna and Paris, and it's going to be very interesting.
He does say, though, he says he's not that bothered about number one anymore. I'm sure there's a degree of him trying to remove the pressure internally from himself by saying that. But I do wonder if you get to a point where you're not worried about records and status anymore. You just want to feel like you used to feel. And I don't think he does. But anyway, we shall see. The race to London is getting a bit more interesting, because David Goffin has had a good week. Rafael Nadal has not posted any results at all. He lost in the first round in Shanghai to Viktor Troicki, so he's a little bit vulnerable. Dominic Thiem was unable to play because of illness last week. Goffin beat Monfils as well last week. So there are players that have an outside chance. I still can't really see anybody catching these guys, I have to say, the top eight.
Well, except that Nadal has floated the idea of taking the rest of the season off. He says his wrist is still causing him a lot of pain, which I find, well, it must be causing him a great deal of pain, because, you know, we talked a couple of podcasts ago about how fixated he's been on the race and on qualifying for London. So that's a big question mark. Monfils, we saw receiving treatment last week. He's a big question mark. And Dominic Thiem, well, you know, illness caused him not to play in Shanghai, but I believe surely exhaustion is a factor in that. You know, played in Metz, took a wild card into Chengdu. You need to be peaking for the Masters Series, Dominic. What are you doing taking a wild card into Chengdu and then not even being able to play in Shanghai? So he is a question mark. Points-wise, I think if he doesn't have a good week in Vienna and Paris, he could be in a little bit of trouble for me. And everyone's nipping at his heels there. Thomas Burdick's there. Roberto Bautista Agut has now just about put himself in the conversation, but he'd have to have similar runs, a similar run in Paris, I think, to the one he had in Shanghai. But they're there and they have a chance. Cilic as well is there.
Awesome. Well, there's plenty there to get our teeth into. But, well, I don't know. The question mark over Nadal, of course, as you mentioned. But I don't think there'll be a huge amount of movement. We shall see. Now, you mentioned Vienna. That's the next ATP main event. And there's also Basel as well. But in Vienna on Sunday night, an event that that we're involved with is tiebreak tens. Six players, Murray, Thiem, Songa, Tommy Haas, Goran Ivanišević, and Marcus Willis. Catherine, one night, who's going to win?
Wouldn't it be amazing if it was the Will Bomb? Who's going to win? Well, I've just said Andy Murray's the favourite for every tournament he enters. I'd say that probably applies to tiebreaks as well. So
it does level the playing field, though, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Kyle Edmund's proven that. I mean, I think even Goran has a chance with that serve. He serves bigger now than he did during his career. If he can, you know, get all his first serves in. That's the beauty of the format. I think Andy Murray's the favourite, but you know, I genuinely believe Marcus Willis when he says he thinks he has a chance. So, you know, who's to say he doesn't?
Indeed. Well, if you want to have a listen to our interview with Marcus, it's on last week's show. Pole vault, Catherine. Just what you've been waiting for to finish the podcast with. You're going to stick around this week.
This is when the dogs need to start barking on cue. Where are you now?
No, it's good this week. I'm telling you, it's good this week.
They're looking at me blankly.
They're putting their headphones on as we speak. Djokovic, whichever way you look at it, I wrote. Novak Djokovic doesn't seem like his normal self. What do you think the issue is? Is it health?
Oh, for goodness sake.
What?
Nobody out there has more information than us, David. We don't
know. They can have an opinion.
It's just speculation.
I know, it's good, isn't it?
Unfueled speculation.
I know, she loves it, really. Oh, well, it's fine. Turn off
that. I care about what the issue is. I don't care what, you know, Bob from Harrogate thinks the issue is.
Sorry, Bob. I mean, you know, we like you to listen to the tennis podcast and join in, but Catherine Whittaker, not so much. Anyway, health, not fully fit. 8% of you think it's because of that. 33% think it's because of lost motivation post Roland Garros, and that's the most popular of the choices in pole vault. 29% think he's just simply lost his form because he's a human being, and 30% think it is something else.
Human beings aren't binary in that way, David. It's probably a combination of all of those things and a million other things that we don't know about.
Thanks, Catherine. Nicole Eclectic says, I chose something else because I think the issue is burnout, which isn't listed. David Swan said, he's already told us his motivation is different now. He doesn't have that drive after getting career Grand Slam. Fraser Mahney says, even if you're Novak Djokovic, you don't recover from bad injuries in a few weeks. And Malin Baker says, Could it just be that he maintained an absurdly high level for a long period but has become human again and lost a bit of confidence? So there's pole vault number one, Catherine. I'm glad you enjoyed that one.
That went well, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad you're chuffed with that one. What about Nick Kyrgios? What do you think of the ATP's decision on Nick Kyrgios?
See, that one's fine.
Thank you.
You can have an opinion on that. That's not speculating about the inner workings of someone's mind.
Thanks. Great, Catherine. Yeah. 32% say that the ATP's decision on Nick Kyrgios was too lax. Ban him from the Australian Open, say 32%. 15% say it was too strong. The original fine was just enough. And 53% think the ATP have got it just right, which I think is what I would agree with as well.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Excellent. And third and finally, Andy Murray, will he be number one this year? Yes or no? What do you think, Catherine?
No.
43% agree with you. 57% say that he will be number one this year. I think it'll be next year as well, as I mentioned. So there you are, Catherine. Pole vault's over. It's painless, wasn't it?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Painless.
Buying in, Catherine Whittaker, here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Have the dogs requested their walk yet?
Oh, they've been requesting it for the past 3 hours. I don't know how I've kept them at bay.
Biscuits. Always works
yeah,
for me,
biscuits.
I have to say. Look, we will be back with another tennis podcast. Catherine is going to be at Tiebreak 10s next week in Vienna. So we'll see what she can get from there. But we'll be back with another tennis podcast in a week from now. Thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you soon.